Hello and welcome to Total Film's spoiler special on The Book of Boba Fett, the latest small screen series from the Star Wars universe. I'm Matt Matem, Deputy Editor of Total Film, and I'm joined by our news editor, Jordan Farley.
Hello.
And the editor of SFX magazine, Darren Scott.
Hello.
Now, this is a spoiler special, and the clue is in the name. There will be full spoilers for the whole season of The Book of Boba Fett, all seven episodes. So if you're not up to date and haven't seen The Book of Boba Fett yet, this is your spoiler warning klaxon. So if you're still with us, get ready because we're about to dive in now and discuss The Book of Boba Fett in full spoilery detail.
I am not a bounty hunter. I've heard otherwise. I know that you sit on the throne of your former employer.
Jabba ruled with fear. I intend to rule with respect.
So, to begin with, Jordan, would you be able to give us just a very simplified overview of what actually happens in this series?
Yeah, so obviously this is the long anticipated Boba Fett story. If you loved Boba Fett as a kid, having watched Return of the Jedi, you've been waiting a long time for this. So it picks up pretty soon after we last saw him in Return of the Jedi, having been devoured in the Sarlacc pit, and the story takes him in an interesting direction from there. He falls in with a group of Tusken Raiders. He becomes a very different person from the one you think you know from the original Star Wars trilogy. At that point, he moves into Mos Espa, and it becomes a little bit of a crime show. He becomes the daimyo of the town. He's essentially like the crime lord. And for a few episodes, it's about him kind of seizing power and trying to lock down the town against other forces who are trying to move in. And later in the show, it becomes a very different show, which I think we're going to discuss in greater depth in a minute.
We will, yes. We will go into obviously all that in detail. But first off, top line, did you enjoy this show?
Yes, very much so. It was a sort of almost like a fever dream, you know, as a child, to be able to think you're going to be able to revisit that universe so directly from Return of the Jedi, and to see it pick up exactly where it left off and it looked exactly the same is kind of something you think's never going to happen. So I really enjoyed just the fact that we get to see new Star Wars every week, really. I didn't really delve too much into what fans may have thought was wrong with it. I just enjoyed the fact that we were getting new Star Wars.
How about you, Jordan?
Yeah, I mean, Darren makes a good point. Like, we are a little bit spoiled nowadays for Star Wars, aren't we? There was a time when, you know, you couldn't even watch Star Wars on video. Like, you had to wait for it to be shown on TV or you had to wait for it to come back to the cinema. And now we get, like, you know, a beautifully produced new bit of Star Wars on a weekly basis almost. And on that level, it's kind of mind-blowing. That said, my slightly cynical take on this show is that it's half of a brilliant show, and that show is The Mandalorian, mm-hmm. and it's half a not very good Boba Fett story. I found almost every aspect of the Boba Fett side of the show to be either underwhelming or disappointing or just generally like not what I wanted, which makes me sound like a giant man baby. But I didn't want to see, you know, Boba Fett turned into this, like, you know, bit of a softy. Like, that wasn't the Boba Fett I knew growing up. The Boba Fett I knew growing up was, you know, told off by Vader for disintegrating people and was gonna shoot Chewie in cold blood. Like, that's not the Boba Fett of the show. And it's understandable that they would want to give him more of a character arc, bit more of a personality, but at the same time, he's not recognizable as the character that I sort of grew up loving as this, like, you know, badass icon, which was my ultimate disappointment.
Mm. Yeah, I probably fell somewhere in between the two of you. And it's interesting, we've obviously moved straight onto Boba, which this is the sort of first big talking point. I will still always call him Boba from childhood, but I suppose Boba. It is Boba,
yeah,
isn't it?
Boba Fett, yeah.
Maybe, Darren, you could give us your sort of, you know, just enjoying it more straightforwardly viewpoint on this. But I felt similar to Jordan, that he just didn't feel like the Boba I sort of, you know, imagined growing up. In a way, I sort of felt we kind of got a cool bounty hunter show with the Mandalorian. So Bob has sort of almost felt surplus to requirements by the time, you know, this came round.
I think being slightly cynical about it, I think it is, it's a plot device to move along the whole Mandalorian and spin-off arc, really. It's possibly an unfortunate side effect of that Boba has been reinterpreted or just revisited in a way that a lot of fans growing up have made in their mind a thing that hasn't necessarily been seen on screen. I mean, he was barely on screen, unless, you know, you want to count all spin-off books and comics and all those kinds of things, which are now no longer considered to be canon. So people have a mindset of what they think Boba Fett should be like, and I think this series didn't deliver that. So I sort of stepped away from the preconceived notions of who Boba was or what he should be like, and, you know, saw him as a slightly older man who's been really put through the ringer quite a lot, actually, and he's trying to do something different for whatever reason. But actually, you know, as you've both kind of said or alluded to, that, you know, it really takes a different turn when another character comes into the series. So it's a shame that he's not really the star of his own show.
Yeah, that aspect is mad. Like, the fact that, again, this is something we'll discuss more, but the fact that it just does become about Din Djarin from episode 5 and 6 is just very, very strange. I also just found it a little bit odd that, like, for me, the most impactful and exciting moments involving Boba Fett were also in The Mandalorian season 2, as opposed to in his own TV show, which is another odd byproduct of, you know, characters weaving in and out of these shows, that they almost get the most exciting moments and the most exciting bits of development outside of their own dedicated stories, which is very strange when you have a show called The Book of Boba Fett and it doesn't even give you the best bits of Boba Fett in it. It's very, very odd.
I found, yeah, I sort of much more enjoyed his part in The Mandalorian season 2, and that was kind of enough revisiting Boba for me, perhaps. And I had to kind of almost convince myself that more time had passed than had in this kind of story world, because he just felt much older than I would have imagined him to be in Return of the Jedi. And perhaps you can partly put that down to being kind of digested by a Sarlacc, you know. That can't have been sort of, you know, anyone's going to be, you know, not feeling their best after that. But yeah, I had to kind of almost just enjoy him as a different character, I suppose. But
yeah, I mean, did the timelines even match up? I mean, he's a kid in Attack of the Clones, probably what, like 10 years old or so? 30 years between the prequels and the original trilogy, that would make him like 40s, 50s at the latest. And Temuera Morrison's probably, what, is he in his 60s now? I need to look that up. But, you know, he's not the youngest man. But, you know, this is very much nitpicking. Like, I don't want to...
Like a true Star Wars fan.
Exactly. But I think Temuera Morrison's been getting a bit of stick for his performance in this show. I don't think his performance is the problem at all. I actually quite like him as Boba Fett. I don't mind too much that they replaced his voice in the original trilogy. Which is probably sacrilege to say, but I actually quite like him as that character. But he just isn't given enough to do, really. Like, especially when it comes to like action and whatnot. Like, I've been waiting all this time to see Boba Fett just do something interesting, exciting. He's meant to be this feared bounty hunter, but he's constantly getting like beaten up and like tricked and deceived and like the. He just seems like quite stupid and quite ineffective in the show for the most part, which was one of the most disappointing things for me.
He does get to ride a Rancor monster. Yeah,
that was badass. I'll give him that.
They at least, yeah, that I felt like that was some kind of redemption for him in sort of badass stakes. He got to just ride that around in a kind of kaiju type moment in Mos Espa. I did enjoy that. And obviously we kind of, to move on to the next big talking point, which we've kind of already veered into a bit as well, but is the return of the Mandalorian. Yeah, we all wondered if Pedro Pascal would return for a kind of cameo as Din Djarin, but I don't think any of us expected him to have quite as substantial a role as he has here, where he kind of completely dominates a couple of episodes. So what did you guys think of that, the return of the Mando?
I mean, I absolutely loved it. I'm a huge fan of the Mandalorian. Both seasons, I think, are just phenomenal. Episode 5 especially, which, you know, Boba Fett doesn't appear in that episode at all. It's entirely an episode of The Mandalorian, effectively. And that was my favourite episode of the series season, which probably tells you all you need to know. I thought he was just as good as he's ever been in this season, in these episodes. I love seeing him wield the Darksaber. I just thought that was so exciting and cool. Just seeing him interact with other Mandalorians, the surviving, his surviving people. All that was really exciting. And, you know, just a big prologue for Mando season 3, unquestionably. Seeing him get a new ship, all that kind of stuff, the modified Naboo starfighter, like that's so cool, super indulgent. Like, did we really need a 20-minute sequence of him building his new ship? But I loved every second of it. And, you know, especially all the stuff with Grogu and Luke, which, oh my God, that was the stuff of dreams, really. Like, just seeing Luke training another Jedi, I was like, oh my God. I've been waiting for 30 years to watch this, to see this. It blew my mind.
People do refer to it as Mandalorian 2.5, don't they? So you can understand why people say something like that, because, you know, it is less of its own thing, and it is moving it towards Mandalorian season 3. And you kind of wonder, well, was that deliberate? Was there, you know, was there scheduling differences? Was there, you know, Pedro Pascal was busy with The Last of Us, so perhaps he couldn't do season 3 of Mandalorian immediately? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, well, obviously they've been planning the Book of Boba Fett for a long time. We got that teaser at the end of Mando season 2. So, yeah, and the interesting thing for me was that it was just such a show of two halves, because the first 4 episodes were dedicated exclusively to Boba Fett and his story, his ongoing story. And at that point, it just radically shifts gears into the Mandalorian. It wasn't even like all that stuff was seeded all the way through it.
Yeah.
It almost felt like Favreau and Filoni and Kathleen Kennedy just went, maybe this Boba Fett show we're making isn't working. Let's bring in the character that everyone loves, and let's just, you know, move towards that thing quite swiftly. The thing that was quite jarring about that was then when it does go back to being Boba Fett's story in episode 7, just felt like a weird anticlimax, because you had 2 weeks of non-build-up and then a kind of quite flat final episode, I thought, which is all just very, very strange. it's just such a weird structure for a season of TV.
Talking of weird structure, I found it strange the way we had this kind of flashback element to begin with as well. That didn't particularly work for me, to be honest. I'd have rather just a more straightforward timeline.
It's like, because, a linear story.
Yeah, because I just don't think it really added anything, the way that they kind of played alongside him, you know, escaping from the Sarlacc's stomach and, you know, joining with the Tuscans. I just felt like it didn't add anything to see it play out the way it did, like withholding that, you know, didn't add any kind of major revelations for me. So I'd have preferred to...
This is a common Star Wars complaint, isn't it? That the prequels don't tell us anything we didn't already know. And this is a definite problem with the Book of Boba Fett, in the sense that those flashbacks just get us to a point where we already were, basically, which is just it felt like a bit of a waste of time, to be honest.
I think it's very interesting that the original reviews for the show, I think that the one that stuck out for me was The Mandalorian It Ain't. And then, you know, 4 weeks later, oh, it is. It's actually The Mandalorian, and it's great. Yeah,
but surely that had to be planned all along, didn't it? Because otherwise, it'd be just too much of a sort of like...
I was being facetious that they would have, you know, turned on a dime and decided just to go with The Mandalorian instead. But it's, yeah, I just can't imagine what the conversations were like going, yeah, we want to do this, but we also want to just turn this into The Mandalorian at one point.
Yeah.
I mean, originally it was going to be a film, wasn't it, for a while? And then
Josh Trank was going to direct it in a previous version. I doubt it was the same story, because I don't think Favreau was involved back then. So I imagine this is just completely different. And obviously The Mandalorian didn't even exist back then. So...
It's interesting as well, because we are obviously going to get an Ahsoka Tano show at some point. And I believe Kathleen Kennedy has described it before as these being like interconnected shows that are going to kind of culminate in a sort of climactic story event, I think it was referred to. So it'd be interesting to see as this progresses how much there is kind of dipping in and out.
Yeah.
And if maybe that is the thing they're going to do with this, that we're just not really going to focus on just one character for one series, and it is just going to be much more of a blend.
I think we're heading towards Star Wars Defenders.
Oh God, let's hope not. That was the first thing that popped into my head, actually, the last time we had an event team up. That didn't go so well, did it?
Talking of that expanded Star Wars universe, then, you obviously sort of touched upon Luke Skywalker earlier, Jordan. It's always exciting to have him back, and this time as well, obviously, there was that ridiculous thrill at the end of The Mandalorian season 2 when it kind of came out of nowhere and we just had Luke being like a badass Jedi again. But then in this one, obviously we spend more time with him. And I was just absolutely blown away by the VFX, the de-aging VFX, however they did it. It just literally kind of blew my mind. And also with that as well, how they did the voice. We kind of discussed this a bit previously when we just first watched the episode. But that must be Mark Hamill's voice, but they must be kind of treating it in some way. They must be changing the pitch or something. Because he just sounds like young Mark Hamill.
Well, I've heard people saying that it wasn't Mark Hamill at all in any form, but I can't quite believe that.
The voice actor, you mean?
The voice or the, you know, the body double.
The body double isn't.
It's definitely not him, yeah. But the voice, I kind of thought, well, how can it not be? But there can't be. It's almost like witchcraft.
They just, yeah.
I mean, Mark Hamill is a very talented voice actor, so it might be that he can, you know, modulate his voice to sound a bit more like he did when he was younger, or there could be some trickery going on as well. I'm not entirely sure, but yeah, it was a very, very good match for Return of the Jedi era Luke. That was really impressive.
Isn't it kind of mind-blowing though to be, like you say, you know, 30 years later watching something like that and just being like, oh my god.
It was messing my head a bit because it just looked so real, and obviously my brain was telling me like it can't be real, but it just could barely see the sort of joins or anything, you know?
Yeah, even compared to, you know, seeing like young Leia in Rogue One and Rise of Skywalker even, which, you know, really wasn't that long ago. Yeah. This is just leaps and bounds ahead of that. Or even the end of the last episode of Mando Season 2, where you could sort of see the joins a little bit more, and he was very static.
And he had his cloak on.
Yeah. It felt like they gave themselves a real challenge with this as well. All set during the day. He's moving around constantly, has tons of dialogue, and yet a lot of it felt almost flawless. You could tell that there was something a bit off. It's not 100% there yet, but it's very promising. I actually thought, as a lot of people did, maybe this opens the door for a young Luke Skywalker show at some point, because it feels like the technology's so close to being there that they could feasibly do that.
Just feels like you could do anything now really with that, doesn't it? You could just do anything in this universe.
Where do you think that they could take that, though, with that kind of technology now?
Maybe George Lucas will remake the
God, don't give him any idea.
Entirely digitally.
Synthespians.
That'll be his directorial comeback. Can you imagine? I'm not sure I would want that. I'm not sure anyone needs that.
No, leave them alone now.
I think a young Luke show. Because there's a lot of potential there to be mined.
I mean,
because you see so little of it in the sequel trilogy.
And because Grogu's going to be like his first student, isn't he? His first.
Well, is he? Yes.
He chose the other way.
He was ready to be his first student.
Yeah.
He chose snazzy clothing over an accessory, and I kind of with him on that one.
Were you ever in any doubt as to which way Grogu was going to go?
Not at all. I mean, there isn't a Mandalorian season 3 if he doesn't pick the mithril vest, is there? Like, he has to go for that. I was disappointed that Luke didn't give him the lightsaber as well, because who is that lightsaber suitable for other than Grogu?
I know, imagine making him choose. Just give him both.
Bit mean.
I know. Not on Luke.
Yeah, but I mean, he was always going to pick Din Djarin, but I appreciated the attempt at building some kind of tension at the end of that episode.
But surely there's going to be ongoing business between Luke and Grogu, isn't there? He's going to let him slip that easily.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, every time I see Luke in these shows, I think this is the last we're seeing of him.
Mm.
And then he keeps coming back. So who knows? Yeah, maybe Luke will be a major player going forward still, and will still have much more to teach Grogu. But I did absolutely love those training scenes between Luke and Grogu. Just the way it mirrors The Empire Strikes Back and Yoda training Luke, him running through the woods and doing all the flips and all that kind of stuff, and the balancing, just, oh god, it just, you know, set my nerd heart aflame. I was just so excited.
Speaking of nerd hearts, can I just talk about R2-D2? I mean, it's such a simple thing, but just seeing him back again, it's just a geekgasm. I love it. He's just such an iconic character to see, and even though he's not doing particularly much, apart from being a little bit irate at his time being wasted, which, you know, you understand.
Switching himself off.
It's always great seeing one of these characters, an iconic character return, but it's also great seeing characters from the animated universe coming over and it all sort of tying up. And not that it didn't tie up before, but it's a kind of strange thing, isn't there, when you consider to be a real character, to be real. And so when they come over from animation and you see them in real life, it kind of cements that this person is actually properly Star Wars.
Yeah,
and so I actually haven't seen the Clone Wars, I have to say, but Cad Bane, can you introduce him?
Cad Bane, he's a Geras bounty hunter, and he was in the Clone Wars and the Bad Batch. And he's one of a few characters in Book of Boba Fett that is from the extended Star Wars universe. So you've also got, I'm not sure how you pronounce his name properly, Chrysantan?
Chrysantan.
I'm sure that's how you...
Chrysantan, yeah.
Yes, the Wookiee, who's also in the Dr. Aphra comics, mm-hmm. which, you know, I was so excited when I saw him, because I just thought, this means we're going to get Dr. Aphra. This is bound to happen. The space archaeologist who has her own droids and takes on Darth Vader and keeps getting away with it. I mean, once you start seeing these characters appearing, it's almost like you see dominoes falling down of the possibilities of where the Star Wars extended universe is going to be. So, I mean, Cad Bane, obviously see him getting impaled at the end of Boba Fett. And that was a big no moment for me, because I thought, you can't bring this character into this series so fantastically. I mean, it's really scary and really well done. Mm-hmm. And then to have him, you know, to be killed off. But then also when at the very end, when you're seeing the back to tank and you think, oh, it must be him, and it's not him, it's Cobb Vanth. But somewhere Cad Bane they're not going to have brought him into the Boba Fett series just to kill him off, surely.
Yeah, it was a bit of an inauspicious ending, wasn't it, for him, I thought.
Because he was so scary when he first arrived, and as I say, as someone unfamiliar with the character, I genuinely found him like disturbing the way he was done, and just his eyes and his teeth and the voice, you know, which I know it is sort of Corey Burton who did the voice in the animation as well.
And I love that.
I just thought it was just a terrifying creation. So I was disappointed that I thought, oh, this is, again, especially as he came in late, I was like, okay, right, so this is going to be teeing us up for what comes next.
Yeah, that was sort of my one big issue with him. I thought beautifully done, like the translation from animation to live action was exceptional. I just thought he was just underutilized and sort of came in too late. Like, I don't really understand why they didn't sort of introduce him earlier.
He wasn't the big bad.
More of a rivalry between him and Boba Fett. Like, that seems like a pretty straightforward storytelling choice, which would have made that final confrontation between Boba and Cad Bane much more impactful. He felt like a bit too much of an afterthought, as excited as I was to see him on screen in live action.
And it's the thing that there's part of me that hopes we do get more, but there's part of me that does also weary a bit of characters always coming back from the dead. And it does take some of the kind of tension and commitment to a show. It
feels like there's no consequences sometimes, doesn't there?
Well, certainly it was left with, I think his breastplate was beeping or something.
Oh, was it?
Some technology was going on when the camera was pulling away. So I think the door is left open for Cad Bane.
Is that the new like finger twitching of character death?
Little bleeping and a little flashing.
I was excited to see a bit more Ahsoka Tano as well. Obviously she has that. She appeared in The Mandalorian season 2. A terrific episode. A little bit less to do here, just kind of standing around. But it was fun
to
see her.
A less exciting appearance, wasn't it, for sure?
But yeah, I definitely got a buzz from seeing her talk to Luke, though.
Yeah.
She's just popped up to remind everyone that she's still here and she's got her own series coming soon.
Don't forget, Disney Plus in 2023. but it was a real thrill to see her talking with Luke, because obviously she was Anakin's Padawan in the Clone Wars, and Anakin being Luke's father, the fact that we'd never seen Luke and Ahsoka interact in any animated show or any movie before, like that was quite exciting. I did love that.
And you mentioned Cobb Vanth as well. Obviously when he got shot, it was like, I knew he couldn't be gone. I knew he wasn't, he was going to manage to hang on in there.
Well, they had their cannon fodder deputy, didn't they? Like, you knew he was going to get it. Which meant Cobb Vanth was probably going to be safe.
See, I thought they would kill him off. I didn't really think about him coming back. But
you haven't watched enough Westerns.
Yeah, that's true.
Timothy Oliphant is someone I've enjoyed a lot in the series. And I could see Cobb Vanth getting his own spin-off show. He seems like maybe someone who's gearing up for a series.
I like Timothy Oliphant, but just the idea of like every character in the show getting their own spin-off series just makes me a bit weary.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I look at the how the Star Trek universe is expanding now, and the Paramount are looking to have 52 weeks a year, a new episode of Star Trek.
Oh my God.
So I think we are heading towards that with Star Wars, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
It felt like we got close to that with Marvel last year, didn't it, in terms of kind of with the episodes on weekly and then the making of episodes and then the films. We got pretty close to like one a week. I don't think it quite did 52, but pretty close.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's like an internal aim, you know?
Yeah.
Where they just want complete dominance of your eyeballs every week.
And I would happily give my eyeballs to Disney Plus.
Let me ask you both a question. Do you think that this show veered too much into fan service? This seems to be a common complaint that I see online. Too many references, too many obscure little characters popping up in the background that either you know or you don't. You know, visiting Toshi's station at the beginning of the series, that's a pretty deep cut Star Wars reference that most people aren't going to get unless you love these films as much as we do. Characters like BD-1 from the game Jedi Fallen Order, like a droid of that make and manufacture popping up. Do you think this enriches a show like this, or do you think it's just a bit too winky and nudgy?
I think it's brilliant. I don't think you can ever be too winky and nudgy. I think because for a general viewer, that's really going to go over their head, and it's something, an additional fan service, if you will, that people who are really invested in it are absolutely going to love. The other problem with fan service is that there's always going to be a faction of fandom that is not what they wanted or expected or thought in their head it was going to be. So even though you're getting all these little nods and teasers and hints and all kinds of things, it's just not quite right for some people. And that's always been the case with any kind of fandom. But I mean, I was sure that there was a lot of things that went over my head in Boba Fett. But there were moments where I was absolutely giddy and you know, doing a sort of seal clap at the screen because I was so excited to see these little things that, you know, they've always been in my head for so long that it's just a joy to see these things brought to life so, so wonderfully.
And I think something that's always been great about Star Wars, even from A New Hope, is that it always just felt like a bigger world. So you saw things and you could imagine where they might have come from, or, you know, what they might have done before or do next. And so if you see something that you don't really recognize, I don't think that really detracts from the experience, because, you know, it's just, that's how it always felt to me. So it always felt like there was this bigger world and you could go and investigate it if you wanted to, or you could just kind of follow along on this adventure. And it just helps it to feel like a larger universe in a way, I think.
I do like that element. As someone who's, you know, watched and read and played an awful lot of Star Wars things over the years, I do get a little buzz out of seeing all this stuff and recognizing it. Like, I like that it's all kind of incorporated and not just shunted off to the side. I think that there is a point to be made about the fact that all this stuff seems to center on Tatooine and we're not going out into the galaxy enough at the moment. But it's a Boba Fett show. Like, he's taking over Jabba's territory. He's going to be set on Tatooine. Deal with it.
In chapter 5 with the Mandalorian, where he's in that kind of ridiculously cool, you know, like sleek looking, you know, space station-y type.
Yeah, the Halo ring.
Yeah.
As everyone called it.
Exactly. Yeah. That was exciting to see a different place. And I suppose I would also factor into this, I am looking forward to them branching out and seeing what it feels like when they do a Star Wars show or film that's just completely outside of the timeline and the planets that we know. Because sometimes I think, you know, there's only so many gaps they can fill in. So until that starts to make it feel small in a way, you know, if they fill in every little detail of what happened to, like, you know, Boba Fett or someone. But for now, it's sort of working for me.
Well, that was the fun thing about The Mandalorian for me. He was going to different places pretty much every episode. Obviously, he himself returns to Tatooine for a couple of episodes, but, you know, it's such an iconic location that I don't blame them for that. I think the test will be when Obi-Wan comes out and we get another show set, you would think, at least in part or predominantly, on Tatooine. Is that going to feel like too much Tatooine? Like, are we just going to need another show that goes elsewhere at that point? We'll find out soon.
And talking of Obi-Wan, what did you make of the prequel trilogy callbacks in The Mandalorian? Did you have any favourites?
Well, I've already mentioned it, but the Naboo Starfighter becoming Din Djarin's new ship. Just awesome. Just so awesome. I do love the way that, I presume, like, Dave Filoni is kind of spearheading this, but I love the way that these shows are, like, reclaiming the prequel trilogy and making them just integral to Star Wars at the moment. Felt like the prequels were such an afterthought, especially in that sequel trilogy. There was so few sort of acknowledgements of their existence. But now you feel like you're getting more of the prequel trilogy than you do of the original trilogy at times. Feels like they're really, like, pushing it, because, you know, we're at a point where, you know, the prequel trilogy is 20 years old at this point. The people who were watching the prequel trilogy as 10 years old teenagers are at that age where they're going to be watching shows like this and they're going to be buying merchandise because they have disposable income. well, the prequel trilogy were the films that they potentially grew up on. So I like the fact that it's embracing the prequel trilogy.
I loved it when Din said wizard as well. That was justice for Phantom Menace there.
Yeah. I felt quite sorry for the fans that had spent so much money on buying the Hasbro Pulse Razor Crest playset, only for it not to come back. And as they were building, you know, rebuilding the Naboo Starfighter, I was just thinking, well, yeah, of course I'm going to buy this. Of course I want it now.
It's nowhere near as roomy as the Razor Crest, though, is it? It's going to be a bit like, you know, how's he going to transport any bounty?
Exactly. It's impractical for a bounty hunter, isn't it, really?
I love that that's your thought about it. How is he going to get anything from A to B? I mean,
especially with Grogu in there as well.
Yeah, exactly. He's got no space at all.
But you just knew as they were rebuilding that starfighter with a little bit where the droid goes, that you just knew that was going to Grogu's.
Yeah. Grogu's little pod, his little personal space. It's a bit sad for him, though. He doesn't even get to, like, hang out with Din Djarin. He has to, like, he's just separated in his own little, like, viewing window. You can't like pull the knobs off the levers anymore.
Well, maybe there'll be a new spaceship in season 3 of The Mandalorian, so we can all buy that as well.
Yeah. Speaking of ships, I was also slightly disappointed by how little we see of Boba Fett's ship in this. The ship previously known as Slave One, the fire spray gunship. He uses it a bit in one episode, and that's pretty much it. Like, come on, it's one of the most iconic ships in science fiction. Like, could we not have had a bit more of it?
It is just one of the coolest as well. It's just, I don't know what it is about the shape and stuff. I've just always loved it.
Such an awesome design. Yeah. It's also at the center of one of the dumbest sequences in the entire show when he goes back to the Sarlacc pit, despite knowing that his armor isn't in there. Why is he looking in there for it? Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
did he know that his armor wasn't in there? I don't remember.
Well, he climbed out. He must have known that he was still wearing the armor when he climbed out of the Sarlacc.
But wasn't he attacked by Jawas?
Yeah.
And they robbed him. He didn't know that.
Yeah, but he knew that he didn't take his armor off in the Sarlacc pit.
Unless he thought he took it off nearby and then it was just gobbled up.
Yeah. Generously, you could go, oh, maybe he thought it was eaten again. Or generously, you could go, he doesn't have any memory of escaping the Sarlacc pit, so he wasn't sure how he got out. But either way, what we've seen doesn't tally up with what he does.
Fair
enough. I did like that we saw those sonic blast bombs again, though.
I love those.
From Attack of the Clones.
Visually, all of the stuff, the effects, just even hearing the laser fire just makes me... I love it. You know, it just transports you to another place, doesn't it?
And really does.
You just want to see, like, when they're all having the fight in episode 7. Yeah, I was just absolutely in my element, you know.
I thought it was quite a pleasantly unpleasant scene as well when they were going back into the Sarlacc and that kind of beaky mouth coming out. It was pretty gross, so I appreciated that side of it.
How do you guys feel about zips in Star Wars?
as in to do up clothes?
Yeah, you know, there was a big controversy about the biker gang in the show wearing clothes that have zips on them.
That flew over my head, I must say.
They did feel out of place, the cyborg biker gang. It was strange. It was a bit like Camden, London. It's weird.
Again, generously, you could say that it was an homage to George Lucas, who directed American Graffiti, and it's an homage to that era of American culture. But at the same time, I wasn't super keen. I didn't like the scooters, like the mod scooters.
They didn't go very fast, did they?
Not really. Those were the one awkward looking bit of visual effects I thought as well, really awkward looking. Like, it didn't look right. Whatever they did, there was something a bit off about all that. It was a bit too much. It looked a bit too like green screeny or composited wrongly or something.
Yeah, it felt like a bit of just a story dead end as well, I think, that whole bit. Like, if you could have cut them out and had more Cad Bane or something.
Yeah.
Or even more Cobb Vanth, I would have taken over.
Or just more like ordinary people, like the ordinary people of Mos Espa or other parts of Tatooine. It felt like, why should we care about this biker gang? Like, this young punks and just a bit annoying. And they have like stupidly small guns and they do ridiculous twirls which aren't necessary. That side of it just really didn't work for me.
And another character we haven't mentioned much, perhaps for a reason, but did you think Fennec Shand got well served this season or not?
I love Ming-Na Wen, but I didn't really feel that the character had very much to do other than sort of running around on behalf of Boba Fett, when actually controversial take, the character of Fennec Shand is actually probably a bit better than Boba Fett, as Bob has been served in this series, certainly.
I felt similar in that I would have just liked to have just seen much more from her in this series, where I just thought she got hardly anything to do, really. Yeah.
Well, there was that wonderful bit at the end where she sort of came in and just slaughtered everybody, and you're just like, yes, finally.
Takes them all out in the blink of an eye. Yeah, I mean, that was the moment where you think, oh yeah, they could have been using this character much more effectively throughout this series. She gets like one sort of half decent parkour action sequence near the start of the show where she's sort of running across the rooftops. I thought that was pretty good. But yeah, again, just very underserved as a character. Once again, just having like zero sort of character development, or just really not much of a personality at all. Just a total right-hand woman to Boba Fett, who had nothing to do, really. Yeah. Such a shame.
Why didn't we see more of Danny Trejo as well? Come on, that was one of my...
We needed more Rancor training scenes. Yeah. If we get 20 minutes to build the new Din Djarin ship, we needed more Rancor training. Yeah.
It was a bit Chekhov's Rancor, wasn't it, as well? Like, I was glad it did come back. Because
you know what?
Like,
I honestly didn't know what he was going to do when he went off. I just didn't... It didn't click for me that he was going to go fetch the Rancor. That worked for me.
No, in a good way. I just knew it had to come back. It worked in a satisfying way, because I was like, come on, you can't give us this Rancor to begin with and then not. Especially we had that kind of fake out early on where that person gets thrown into the pit and then there's no Rancor there. That was like, oh, come on, you know. That. But I was glad we got to see it fully rampage at the end.
I love the fact that we actually got to explore a bit more of Rancor history, if you will. You understand them a bit more, and you feel a bit more sympathetic to them, Rick, rather than being sort of fearful of them. And you know, it certainly made me dig out my original Return of the Jedi toy, place it back in a pride of place on my shelf. But those scenes at the end were with the Rancor monster were absolutely fantastic. Oh, I loved it.
Yeah, it was awesome.
I saw some people down on that, which I very much disagreed
with. The Rancor?
Yeah.
What?
Like the kaiju.
What do you want?
I know, exactly, yeah. I saw someone tweet something like, oh, I always wondered what it would be like, to see a Rancor on the loose, and it turns out it's pretty boring or something. And I was like, that's
come off it.
I know. I mean, shocked. Yeah.
For me, that was the one sort of saving grace of that last episode, if I'm perfectly honest. I thought that whole last episode was a bit underwhelming for me. I was very disappointed in Robert Rodriguez as a director. I just thought he staged it all very badly. Like, it was all just set down like one or two quite boring, dusty streets. Everyone was very static. There was just people exchanging blaster fire, and there was just no dynamism to the action at all. Like, all that was a bit weird. And then you have those like big giant spider bots. Mm. And the fact that they're shielded and no one comes up with an effective strategy against them at any point. They're just constantly shooting laser fire into them, even though they know it's not going to work. Like, all of that stuff just felt a bit, I don't know, it felt a bit first drafty. Like, they're going, you know, this could have done with a few more passes to really tighten this up and make it exciting. For me, it was a very underwhelming ending to the whole show.
Well, it blew me away. It gave me everything I was looking for. It was just a visual treat for my eyes, really. And also, I guess it just harks back to when I was a kid and being obsessed with the Rancor monster and seeing it on the loose and properly going for it and smashing up spider bots. I wasn't sort of sitting there being as critical of it as perhaps I could have been. I was just like, yeah, this is taking me to a place that I wanted to go to, and always knowing that there's something else coming as well. But it's not like it's the finite moment in Star Wars universe. So thinking, well, what's going to be next? Even though I've got this, I've got something else is coming soon. So, you know, I was saying earlier on, like, just blaster fire, Rancor monsters, just fantastic. Darksaber slashing open force fields. Just brilliant. Just really, yeah, impressive for me. But I am also a very easily pleased geek, so.
And Grogu, don't forget Grogu.
Oh, Grogu, I mean, come on, yeah. And
we haven't spoken enough about Grogu this episode.
Just the fact that he got his little ball from the Razor Crest back as well, that was, that sort of touched my heart.
Yeah, I loved him putting the Rancor to sleep as well. I thought that was really sweet.
Oh, he's so cute.
just adorable,
cute.
Absolutely adorable. Again, just going back to an earlier point, I felt it was a little bit odd that we got like the reunion between Din and Grogu in this show as well. Like, it's, there's a lot of kind of cross-pollination, isn't there, with these series, it feels
that's
like.
That's the thing, so you won't be able to watch The Mandalorian Season 3 without watching. It's not one of those things you can kind of pick a strand to follow, is it? Because you're just going to have watched these episodes.
Unless there's a previously on the Book of Boba Fett.
They probably will, actually.
Before Mando Season 3.
There's just an assumption, isn't there, that everyone's just going to watch everything, because why wouldn't you? I mean...
Yeah, true. If you're in on one, you're probably going to watch the rest, aren't you? But yeah, just a bit of an odd choice. I guess it makes sense. They want to hit the ground running in Mando Season 3 to get them back together. They don't have to spend three or four episodes getting them back together. But at the same time...
I thought they'd be apart for longer as well.
Yeah, just very odd decision. But, you know, I was delighted to see Din and Grogu in this show, you know.
Darren, are you going to be getting any toys of the twins as well? We haven't even mentioned the twins.
I'm not really a fan of CGI huts.
Oh. You just like the practical ones.
I like a practical hut, thank you very much. Yeah.
I thought this CGI was pretty good, though.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was decent.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it was some of the best effects work in that series.
Yeah, I appreciate that the huts are still around, but my heart is sold to... The latex. giant Jabba and little Salacious. What happened to Salacious?
Salacious Crumb.
I think I saw concept art for Boba Fett series where he was in a cage, dead, I think, with Bib Fortuna on the throne. So I don't really know. Maybe Brutal. Somebody could enlighten me. I'm sure maybe I've missed something. But
yeah, my Salacious Crumb knowledge is lacking. I'll need to look into this.
Well, like, maybe he'll have the next spin-off series. You never know. I would love that, actually. Imagine. Quite happy with that, yep. 7 episodes.
But so, on that note, that's it from us for now. So please hit us up with your thoughts. And if you want more from us, check out Total Film and SFX, wherever you get your magazines from. And so now, just time for us to say goodbye.
Bye.
This is the way. Goodbye.